The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
The Bert Show.
Gen Z, it's time to defend yourself because bosses are coming after you. So I saw this headline. Bosses are firing Gen Z right after hiring them.
Is this how you tell me I'm losing my job?
No. So this comes from Fortune magazine. Okay. So this isn't just something like from a random hole on the internet. And I was like, all right, so they did an interview or they did a survey. And I'm like, how many people were actually in the survey? And it turns out they surveyed nearly 1,000 U.S. leaders. So this is like there's some legitimate research. So it was intelligent.com. And this is a platform dedicated to helping young professionals navigate the future of work. They surveyed nearly 1,000 U.S. leaders and came up with some shortcomings when it comes to Gen Z. So here's what the survey said. And I'm going to turn it over to our Gen Z members of the Bert Show. If you are also a Gen Z listener and you would like to call up and defend yourself, 1-855-BERT-SHOW, 855-237-8746. Or if you're a boss that would like to slam on some Gen Zers, by all means, you can call up too. All right, so here's why Gen Z is getting fired right after getting hired. So lack of initiative. Cited by 50% of surveyed leaders, many feel new grads aren't showing the drive employers expect. Next was unprofessional behavior. This includes not adhering to workplace norms like punctuality, appropriate language, and attire.
Abby was late yesterday.
Got him. Next is frequent lateness. Hey, that was one time. Tardiness to work or meetings has caused frustration among bosses and team members. Now, again, 1,000 bosses or 1,000 like industry leaders were interviewed for this. Okay. Next is disorganization. Employers are concerned about Gen Z's ability to stay on top of tasks and manage their workload effectively. Poor communication. Leaders mention issues with how new hires convey information, both written and verbal. Struggles with workload. 20% of bosses say fresh grads can't handle the job's day-to-day demands. So 1 in 6 bosses of these 1,000 people that were interviewed, 1 in 6 bosses are wary of hiring Gen Z again. 1 in 7 might avoid doing so entirely next year.
Wow.
I know. All right. What do you got to say for yourself, Gen Z?
I think my problem with a lot of these surveys is I feel like most of this can just be attributed to youth. And I feel like every generation, the older one always has a problem with the younger one. And it's just because you're 22 years old. You're figuring out life. This is the real world for the first time. And I think there's maybe a lot of young people who haven't learned the hard lessons yet in the workplace. Whereas maybe there are some Gen Zers that are more prepared for work. Like, I know when I started my job, I was there up on time. I'd be there at 8:58. I was ready to tackle whatever. Whereas maybe some people didn't quite have that kind of chutzpah
drive yet.
And so I think it does kind of just vary person to person. But I also think a lot of these mistakes or errors or just character flaws have a lot to do with just being young. And then you figure it out. And then Gen Z is going to be the one making these surveys about Gen Alpha.
I totally agree with that. I mean, these kind of surveys always kind of bother me in that way because it's obviously clumping a lot of people together at once, and I don't think it's entirely fair. I totally get what you're saying, Abby. Like, it's just the youth. And when you're graduating college, it's hard to be that, you know exactly what you're doing. I will say that I do agree with some of these things, like the inability to, like, write simple emails and some things like that. But on the whole, I think this is just constantly going to be a problem for everybody down the road.
All right. It didn't take any time for a boss to call in.
Oh, gosh.
It's my old boss. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Bert Show. You are a boss. What is your take on Gen Z employees?
Well, I'll say I run a railroad outfit, and personally, I've hired, I would say, probably 20 people that were 25 and younger in the past 8 months. And seriously, two of them have worked out. And personally, I just feel like it's they don't want to work. They show up late. They don't have the drive that I'm used to seeing. That most of my workers have. You have to want to work. You know what I mean?
No, I hear what you mean, which is why only two of them are still there. You're like, yeah, sorry, bye.
Exactly.
All right, so we got Nicole, who is Gen Z. Now, would you like to defend Gen Z employees?
Yes, I absolutely would love to defend Gen Z employees. I actually have been with my company for a little over a year, and I recently just got a new job offer for more money and more opportunity because the place that I'm in right now, they only pay for lifers, and I don't know how we're supposed to save up for a house or, you know, do anything in this economy on this little amount of compensation that they're wanting to pay. I get we don't have the experience, but how are we supposed to get jobs if we don't get the experience? So for that reason, I've been accused of job hopping, but it's really just to further my career and have more opportunity and make more money.
Thank you, Nicole. All right, Casey, who is a hiring manager, thank you for joining the Burt Show. What have you noticed about Gen Z employees?
So I actually have a little bit of a different perspective on this. So most of the people that I hire are Gen Z. I am a hiring manager for a very large ambulance company. And I've noticed that with jobs I've hired for roles that are more administrative and then for EMTs and paramedics, and they tend to work out when there's more of a when there's more of a purpose to their job. So the ones who are EMT who are coming up and becoming EMTs and paramedics, they're actually doing really well and lasting a lot longer. I went to a seminar a while ago because of the issues that we've been having with Gen Z, and the guy actually brought up that Gen Z is more purpose driven. So they're not how we were just like, okay, let's hustle and go. They do better in a job where they have a purpose.
Abby Jackson, would you agree with that?
I think that totally makes sense because the promises of what we're working hard towards is a little bit different and has shifted than what I think the generation prior to us could. Right now, buying a home is like an impossibility almost. And so if you're not working towards something like a huge goal like that, and that's not what you're working towards, having a purpose-driven job maybe can fill that gap instead.
I think that's 100% true because I went into a career where I love what I do and I feel like I have a purpose, but I think a lot of people who are stuck behind these cubicles where in the past, maybe 50 years ago, if you just worked your way to the top and you worked hard, you were promised the American dream of buying a home and having a family, whereas now it's just not so simple. And I think having more access to information through social media and stuff, I think a lot of Gen Zers are having this existential crisis of what is the purpose of it all? Why am I working? And if I don't have that, then yeah, I am going to exhibit some of those poor working behaviors.
Intern Sadie, who is in college but will be entering the workforce, I'm sure this is lovely to hear.
Yeah. I'm sure this is going to be the highlight of your day. Yeah.
Anybody hiring and wants to hire a fellow Gen Z, I'm looking for work in May. But I have a different perspective because I have an on-campus position where I'm a staff lead as a Gen Zer for Gen Zers, and my boss is also a Gen Zer.
Oh, wow.
So there's just a trifecta of Gen Z, and
nothing getting done. Not a damn thing.
And we do have some communication issues, but at the end of the day, it's like a lot of them with the whole purpose thing, like they just want to have fun at work. Like that's all it is. They just want to enjoy their job and get it done. It's not, you know, I can push them to get their work done, but it just has to be done like creatively. Like I have to kind of give them little weird creative tasks to do to get stuff done. But if I just say, oh, I need this done now, it's not happening.
All right, let's take this last call. Alex, who is a manager and would like to crap on Gen Z employees, go for it.
I definitely would. I am a millennial and I am tired of babysitting the Gen Zs, okay? If I ask you to do something, please do it. I don't have time to sit here and make up these creative things for you to do. We all have a job. We're all grown up. Let's come to work and do what we have to do.
Thank you, Alex. I feel like she really needed to get that off her chest.
She was holding that in for a second.
The Burt Show.
Abby, please tell me you were looking 10 out of 10
when you ran into the ex.
I was looking so good on Friday.
Yeah.
This is honestly, I know,
all of us.
You know when you fantasize about running into your ex for the first time, like you always want it to go a certain way. And for the last 5 years, every now and then, I'm just kind of, I would be, every time I was back in my hometown, I was just kind of like, I always want to have that moment where like I look really good in a bar, my hair is all done, my outfit's on point, and a man is talking to me, and I run into this man. And that's exactly what happened on Friday while I was back in Jack's. So I'm about to drop some lore on you. This is five-year-old Abby lore. And in order for this story to hit with you the way that it hits with my soul, I need to tell you the full thing.
Oh, so we need the history.
This is the history. So this guy was like never my boyfriend, which I'll get into why he was never my boyfriend in just a second. But he was the first guy that I dated after college. I was at the top of my game. I was 6 months out of college. I was killing it at work. I lost a little bit of weight. So I'm feeling good about myself, and I'm going out on the town and experiencing my hometown in a new way, going out to the bars and hanging out with my friends. And I match with this guy on a dating app, and we end up meeting out at a bar, and then we go on a couple of dates, and it turned into just a really like sweet situationship. It wasn't very serious. You know, we're 22, 23 years old, and it was just one of those relationships that just kind of like just fell into place. He'd be over at my apartment all the time, and we would cook dinner, and we would watch Vine compilations. It was a classic situationship, as the kids would say. And the problem with this situationship is that I was in just such a good place. Like this man came in and he was still trying to figure out things in his life. Like he was still in college, but he was my age, and I was really crushing it at work, and I knew exactly what I wanted to do with my life, and I wanted to get out of Jacksonville. And this guy was just not in the same place. And I was very conflicted with that because I was very surprised by my feelings for him because I didn't really like him at first. And he just kind of like, he like wooed me and just surprised me. And I just really liked hanging out with him, and same for him. But I had a hard time grappling with the fact that like I knew we were not compatible, and the fact that we had such great chemistry. That was really hard for me to handle because I was just kind of like, well, he's not going to be my boyfriend. Like this guy is just kind of messing around. So like, what am I doing? But I like hanging out with him, so I don't want to stop hanging out with him. So like, what do I do? And I would do this thing where I would kind of push him away a little bit. And I used to say this thing over and over again. And I'm saying this specifically because of how weird the situation has turned out to be. But I would look at him and I'd be like, you just need to go away for 5 years. Just go away for 5 years, figure yourself out, and then come back and we'll figure this out. But you just need to, just give me 5 years. I want to go do my thing. You need to figure out your life and we'll handle this. So long story short, through a series of events, this guy ends up standing me up, and I never heard from him again. Like, we were supposed to go out, he stands me up, and that was it. I was like, I'm just going to take this as my sign to let him go. And
the sign doesn't get much bigger than that.
The sign doesn't.
I don't know if I'd call that a sign, well, Abby.
Here's the thing. I could have called him up and I could have been like, hey, where okay. are you? But I just okay. took, I'm just like, I'm going to take this opportunity to bow out gracefully.
Let's just say you were reading the room, actually.
I was quite literally reading the very empty room, Kristen. The room was silent. I could have fought for it if
you
I wanted
have.
To.
And you
I,
could have.
And to an extent, I think that's what he wanted me to do. And I was like, I'm not doing that, like loser.
No.
So, but I was really hurt by it because we had become such good friends that it felt like a friend ditching me rather than a romantic situation. I was like, I thought we were cool. I thought we were buds.
Which actually I think burns more.
It does, for sure.
That's honestly why I was heartbroken after it, because I knew, I was like, he needs to figure his life out for this to be anything. And I kind of knew that wasn't going to happen. I think I had this idea in my mind that I was like, we'll come back together in years and it'll be great. But yeah, so it just sucked that I felt like I lost a friend. So he stands me up, and then the pandemic hits, and I just, you know, never hear from this man again. But I always wanted to have that moment of us looking at each other across from a bar, couple drinks in, and just having a knowing glance of like, we were just kids. We both hurt each other in different ways. I see you. I recognize the thing that we had, and it was special, and we can now put that chapter to bed.
Oh, look at that.
I always wanted that to happen.
Yeah.
And so every year, I'd be kind of like, is it 5 years yet? Like, I wonder if he figured his life out. And I'll do this thing that girls do where they kind of like drunkenly stalk them like once a year. Like just once a year, you have a couple too many drinks and you start thinking about all your past relationships and you wonder like, what is that guy doing?
What's he up to?
And what's so funny is this guy blocked me last year and I haven't spoken to him.
Last year.
I haven't spoken to him since he stood me up. Like literally randomly, he blocked me.
Because you had been checking.
Yes.
Throughout the years, as one does.
As one does.
Just to see, like, not often, but just a yearly check-in to see, like, what he's up to.
I'm just curious. Like, yeah. In my opinion, I thought we were friends.
Yep.
And he just disappeared out of nowhere.
And then this past year, you do it, and you're blocked.
I'm blocked. I haven't spoken to this man in 5 years. So I'm like, that's so freaking random, but mm-hmm. whatever. So he blocked me, and I was kind of like, okay, maybe that's, like, this is just done. I'll never hear from this man again. So I'm at this local dive bar in my hometown that I had posted about. I'd posted a picture on my Instagram story with my friend. I'm like, look, we're out at this bar. I used to love this bar. Love it here. Blah, 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 blah. And we're hanging out. We're bopping around, having some drinks. And there's a couple different rooms in this bar. So there's a front room. There's a ping pong room next to it. And then you have to go through the ping pong room to get to the pool room. So we're out in the front part of the bar hanging out and we go, let's take a lap. Let's see what we can do around here. Let's go get a bar or let's go get a drink at the bar in the pool room, which is in the back. So we walk our way through the other rooms to get to the pool room. And we stop at this Touch Tunes. If you know what a Touch Tunes is, mm-hmm. it's like where you can start playing music in the bar. And we're looking at all the music we want
to
play. We're
trying to find your favorite Taylor Swift song.
No, we were looking for Kendrick songs, actually, which is very ironic in this moment. I'll tell you why. We're looking for Kendrick songs. And then I kind of turn around and I'm immediately stopped in my tracks. I'm like, oh my God, that's the guy. Like that's, we're going to call, he's not my ex, but I'm like, we'll call him my ex for simplicity's sake. Like that's my ex. And I kind of freeze and I just look at my friend and I go, I haven't seen that guy in 5 years. And I'm like, first of all, I like straighten up. I stick the boobs out. I'm like, do I look good? Do I look good? And a thing about this guy is that the first girl that he dated me post-grad was a girl who recently graduated from high school. So I look at her and I was like, you know what song we need to play right now? I was like, we got to play Not Like Us.
No, you are petty.
So I cue it up into Touch Tunes.
And you pay a little extra to make sure it plays next.
And boy, we did. We're girls with big girl money. And we go to the back of the car. And I'm just kind of like trying to make eye contact with him. Like, I just want us, again, to have that moment where we look at each other across the rooms, acknowledge, I see you, you see me. Glad we can move on from this. And then we'll never see each other again.
So you don't know if he's noticed you yet at this point.
I'm kind of getting the vibe that maybe he did notice me, but like we're not making eye contact. Me and my friend are talking and he's over there playing pool with his friends. And at one point he does come around to the bar where I was standing and he doesn't say hi to me. He just passes me. And I'm like, okay, he didn't say anything. And then I'm like trying to make eye contact with him because I just want us to look at each other so I know what I'm getting into because he's with a bunch of friends. And there's just not a good moment for me to bust in because he's with friends and I'm with friends. And I know we both are just concerned as to like, what are we walking into? Because he did me wrong. I did him wrong. It could be bad. And then all of a sudden, Kendrick Lamar's Not Like Us starts to play. And there's this moment where I get to scream A minor and kind of look at him knowing that, you know, the first girl he dated after me was a 17, maybe 18 year old. I don't know.
You got to look at him the same way Kendrick looked at the camera.
And that's exactly what I did. I had that smirk on my face and I was like, it's probably A minor. And then the night ended. We did not make eye contact once. I did not confront this man.
No.
Which what? I kind of regret, but I got in the car and I realized, I'm like, it's been 5 years. I was like, I would tell him all the time that we just need 5 years. And honestly, every year I would go, has it been 5 years yet? And I haven't thought about it. And to the date, like literally to the date, it was 5 years. Like we split in February of 2020 and it is February of 2025 now. And I'm like, that's the closure I needed. We didn't have to, I wish we could have had that moment where we looked at each other and just like moved on with life. But
I can't believe you didn't say anything.
I know. I know.
And I wonder if he saw you.
He definitely saw me. Like it was one of those things where it's like, we're not looking at each other, but I could just tell. But I was like,
had a nose job.
I have had a nose. I do look a little different. Maybe you didn't recognize me, but it's been 5 years. And I wanted those 5 years because I'm like, maybe he's going to go off and he's going to become who he is. And we'll have this moment where we come together and it finally works out. But I'm standing there in the bar and I'm like, he's just doing the exact same thing that he was doing 5 years ago. And I knew that. And I knew that's why we would never work out. And that's why I would push him away emotionally is because I'm like, I knew in 5 years we would be arguing about the same things we were arguing in 2020. And it's that you need to get your crap together. And if you can't, then we can't be together.
I love that you literally, you gained all that
by not even talking or making eye contact with the man across the room. Listen, you literally garnered all that without uttering one. You didn't even look each other in the eyes.
I didn't have to. I saw him. I was like, this is what, you look exactly the same. I am a completely different person.
Yeah, because he wasn't thinking that about you. Not at all.
No, he was like, that girl looks good.
Hey, The Bird Show.
So this is going to be an awkward conversation because she needs to tell her friend, hey, the reason why you're not succeeding in life is because of the way you look. It's because you're busted. And Cassie, you need to tell that to who in this studio?
No one in this studio. Probably myself. No, I do. I have to do something. And it's coming from a place of love. But my friend, I'm pretty sure, obviously I don't know for certain, but I know that she is not succeeding in life because of how she looks. And let me explain, because, you know, of everyone here, I have no makeup on right now. I washed my hair a couple of days ago. My face is shiny from some heavy moisturizer. I've got stretchy clothes on. Like, I am the last person to be having this conversation, which is why I've been hesitant about it. But she is searching for a job, and she's going on job interviews looking like I do now in studio, except a little more dressed up. And she and I used to bond over the fact, like, we wouldn't wear makeup to work. We'd be like, yeah, screw the patriarchy. We don't have to play these stupid games, you know. We don't have to look a certain way. But the reality is, you can say that and you can have that be your ethos, but it doesn't matter because at the end of the day, you kind of do.
So she's not putting any effort into her appearance when she's going on these job interviews.
Right. And she's getting all the interviews because she's hyper qualified, hyper intelligent, and looks have just never been important to her. Like, just the being polished, let me put it that way, not looks, but being polished has not been important to her. But it is now when the interviews, and I don't know how to have this conversation, especially looking like I do every day, and being like, hey, you do need to do this if you want to play the game. If you want to be hired at these companies, you got to put some polish on. And I'd
address the part to be the part.
Yes. And I've recently changed my thinking on it because I really used to reject it a lot. And I'd be like, this is stupid. You know, if you want to do it, that's great. But you're not going to tell me I need to wear heels in order to be professional. You're not going to tell me I need to have makeup on in order to be taken seriously.
Because the beauty standards obviously are different for men and women when it comes to presenting yourself in a professional environment. Like, we always joke and laugh at, like, if we're doing an event, It's very different, the prep work Mo and Bert have to put in to go to an event, say, mm-hmm. for myself, Abby, or Cassie. Because, I mean, we're getting hair, we're getting nails, we're getting, you know, Abby and I and Cassie spray tans. And then you're also having to deal with makeup and your outfit. And we're now we're like 3.5 hours deep.
Yeah, Kristen and I took the same 12-hour vacation to Aruba last night because we both walked in and I was like, oh, spray tan?
Yeah.
I've got a spray tan BBA this week. Yeah, we're ready to go. Shout out to Coco Bella Tanning. Kaylee's wife got to see me naked in my kitchen yesterday.
Ooh, jealous.
I will be taking my vacation later today after the show and getting that tan. And so I've changed recently how I thought about it because I wanted to reject it as well because it's not fair. It's a financial drain. It's a time drain. And I have noticed that I get respected more if I'm wearing makeup or if I'm looking polished. My hair's not curly. And it sucks. And I hate it. But then I watched a TV show called The Diplomat on Netflix starring Keri Russell, which excellent, by the way. And Allison Janney comes in and she plays like the vice president. And what I loved about Keri Russell's character, this is going to make sense, I promise, is she always looks a little disheveled. Like, her hair is kind of like mine, just not brushed, no makeup, wears a minimal, like, just throws on a black suit because she's getting work done. She's an international crisis management, getting it done. And the vice president comes in and is like, yeah, basically reads her the riot act on how she looks. And she's like, you think it says scrappy, but there's a soft power in being polished. And I was like, oh, it's a power tactic. You can use this to your advantage now. Like, you can play the game knowing that you are playing the game, not because you're being forced to wear makeup, but because it gives you an advantage in playing the game. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
It
does. It makes sense, but it also feels like you're still playing the game.
Yeah, you are. You are. Well, if you want to play the game.
The problem is with life is you don't have a choice whether or not you're going to play the game or not. I mean, you can absolutely forfeit everything and I guess just like live, in a box on the side of the road, you're welcome to do that. But if you are existing in some way, you have to participate in the game.
And I think that's where a lot of people, or at least I used to clash heads, is like, I didn't want to play that part of the game, but I want to play the game. And so realizing that there's a power in it and you can sort of hold that power, I was like, all right, now I can get into this and I don't feel like I'm being forced into this box. My point is, I want to have this conversation with her and be like, yo, I think you need to change your wardrobe a little bit, fix your hair, wear some makeup. But I don't know how to tell my friend that, especially looking like I do on air every day. But I've had this job for almost 15 years. And so it's a little different. We're in a studio. Y'all only see me every single day, although we do have cameras now. So how I would consider her a tier one friend. But do I, as a friend, looking busted at my job, be like, you busted, you need to step up a little bit?
Is this one of those things where it's like a separation of the sexes, where women are in our heads about this, where a guy could just easily have a conversation with another dude?
For sure. I was sitting here thinking that to myself as you were asking, like, if it's a top tier friend, I wouldn't even think twice about this. I would just tell him exactly how I feel. Of course, because it's coming from a good place. You mean it sincerely and you really think it'll help. I wouldn't like second guess it at all. I would just tell her straight up.
I'm just afraid she's going to see me as like almost a backstabber based on our shared history of like, yeah, F makeup. We don't need to subscribe to those beauty standards. And all of a sudden I'm like, but okay, but you do. I don't, but you kind of do.
Abby, how would you have this convo with a friend?
I'd be a little bit more passive about it. I'd be like, hey girl, I have this Drybar gift card. Like, what if right before your next interview, like, let's just have a day where we get our mind right. Let's get a blowout. Let's go, you know, look for a cute outfit. Like, I would do it in a way that isn't critical and more of like me just sort of subconsciously making something happen.
Could you turn it into a thing where, like, you know, she's going on these interviews and she hasn't nailed one down yet, and what Abby is saying, could you ask to be her stylist for one of the interviews?
That could be fun. I think it would. I kind of like a combo of all this. Mm-hmm. I like the idea of the day before. You all are giving me ideas. I think I'm going to make it a challenge. I'm going to play into the fact that she's super feministy and just be like, humor me. Do your hair, do your makeup, and see how the interview goes and see if you get called back. Let's do a play. Let's see whether or not these dynamics are really still at play.
I love that.
That's good.
I think that's genius.
That's the one.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'll let you know how it goes.
Please do.
Hey, The Bird Show.
Time to get buzzed on the hot goss from Hollywood with Abby. It's The Bird Show's entertainment buzz.
I love the part where you said, let's get right into the entertainment buzz.
I love that part, too.
That was my favorite part of the segment.
Thanks, Katie.
She got right into it.
Woke me right up.
A little trigger happy, sorry.
You ready to get out of here, too? Is that what that is? She's like, let's get on with it. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, I'm ready for Disney.
All right, Blake Lively, she filed her amended complaint against Justin Baldoni. Now, Justin's legal team already made an amendment to his where he took evidence that actually TikTok sleuths found, where they took screenshots from the New York Times' expose on Justin Baldoni or Blake Lively's complaint against Justin, and they found that a lot of them were dated October 31st, giving the impression that the lawsuit was probably leaked to the New York Times way before it came out in December, and only giving Justin Baldoni's team about 24 hours to respond to it, making it look like they were working with Blake Lively's team and being very skewed against Justin Baldoni's side.
So it seems like this is a little bit of some biased journalism.
Yes, it appears biased. So they decided to amend their complaint, Justin Baldoni's team did, to include that information. And then Blake Lively's team was like, okay, well, if y'all are going to amend your lawsuit, we have stuff that we want to amend to this lawsuit. And then they asked for an extension, and the judge was like, hell nah, I'm only going to give you a couple more days. And so finally, she's used that time to add these important claims that could be very damning evidence against Justin Baldoni. So this is a 141-page document, but inside it, Blake says that she was not alone in complaining about Justin Baldoni and raising concerns about the alleged sexual harassment while they were working on the movie It Ends With Us. She says that at the time, Justin Baldoni had acknowledged those complaints in writing, of course, during the filming. But this is actually contrary to the narrative that's already been put out, especially by Variety magazine. So Variety magazine did reporting where they asked Sony, so Sony was the distributor of the movie, and they asked if there were any HR complaints that had been filed against Justin Baldoni during production, and they were told no, point blank. blank. So is it possible that sexual harassment could have happened with two other women on the set and they just never filed a complaint? Absolutely. Do I think it looks a little suspicious that something would happen and you wouldn't say anything to HR? Absolutely. But this is the amended evidence that she's bringing to her lawsuit.
Now, I'm not surprised something would happen and somebody didn't say anything. I feel especially in that industry, when there are power dynamics, that you often feel you self-silence for self-preservation.
Mm-hmm.
So that I can understand. But it does, just from what I heard, it feels like they're dragging people in who don't want to be dragged in because they did not file a complaint.
100%. Like, okay. There's a reason you didn't speak up if something did happen.
Correct.
And so I understand that maybe this is two women who are going to stand by Blake Lively's side and say that we stand with you. Like, mm-hmm. you say this happened to you on set. This also happened to us. And so they're going to come together.
And sometimes there's power in numbers. All it takes is that first person to say something where the others feel whether comfortable, empowered, whatever word you want to use to share their own story.
100%. I do find it a little weird that it wasn't included in the original complaint. It feels like pretty important evidence. Even if you don't want to drag them into the courtroom to testify, it does feel weird that if there is even more evidence against the person that you're going after in your lawsuit, why not bring it up at the very beginning? But again, there could be reasons why that we don't know. Maybe they didn't want to be dragged into it. And now finally, they're just like, you know what? We will be a part of it because we know this is going to help you. So it's all going to end with them in court in March.
All right. So I definitely want to get this phone call because, Abby, we have somebody on line one. Does she want to use her real name or voice disguise or any of that? Is she good? All right. So, Vanessa, you work in the movie industry and you're familiar with people not reporting stuff.
Yeah. I worked in the movie industry for many, many years. I cannot tell you the amount of sexual harassment that I've seen towards other people that happened to myself. In fact, and you don't say anything because you're afraid to get blackballed. You're afraid to be fired. Most of these movies that take place are in at-will states. They can turn around and fire you for any reason. They can just be like, it's not working out, and let you go. So it becomes really scary. And I have to say, from that perspective of seeing it from the inside, seeing that video that everybody's kind of getting on Blake, like of them dancing, in the very beginning of that video, he mentions that he wants to kiss and she's like, no, no, no. And he keeps pushing it. And what I saw in that video is a professional actress trying to play it off, trying to minimize it, kind of pushing back, making jokes, trying to diffuse a situation that she was clearly uncomfortable in. And he kept pushing that, like, well, let's kiss, let's kiss. And she wasn't comfortable with that. And, you know, when you have all these eyes on you, the last thing you want, especially as an actress, is to be the person who is causing a scene, and now you're a diva on set.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
As a woman,
it becomes really hard.
Yeah, as a woman, the last thing you want to be is perceived as difficult, even though you were just standing up for yourself. And I appreciate you saying that, because I actually felt the same way when I watched it, because I know for myself, whether it be in interviews or with, you know, other people in the industry, they say something that's out of pocket that makes you uncomfortable. But because I think women have been wired for years to keep the peace and make it nice and you don't ruffle feathers and you just kind of like smile and put up, I do think that could definitely be some of it there.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been on sets where it was closed scene, you know, closed set, closed scene. You know, women were doing things where it was going to be intimate, or there, you know, maybe with some nudity, and where I've witnessed men sneaking into the back of the set and taking pictures of the women.
Oh my God!
I went to the production and said, "Hey, this happened," and I almost got fired off of the job because I was the whistleblower that happened. And the gentleman ended up erasing the pictures off of his camera, off of his phone, and then made it really difficult for me in the future. Like, I never worked with that production company again. And that was like an opportunity for me that was lost because I spoke up. And the only one, you know, the actress was like, thank you so much for speaking up for me, because most of the time people don't stand up for us.
You want to hope that there's some involvement in this industry, but it still sounds like it's fairly toxic.
It is, for sure.
Hey, Vanessa, thank you so much for calling. Hang on the line because I want to get your information because you are a great inside source and I love what perspective you're able to bring to this.
Sure.
Thank you. For more stories, head to The Burt Show podcast on your favorite listening platform.
The Burt Show.
The question is, if you think
I almost did. Take
one more break.
Time.
So close. Right so close. There. If you think something from an ex is meaningful, but your current partner doesn't approve, do you keep it or do you toss it? We're going to get to that in just a second. But first, this is going to get stuck in your head. And I'm sorry, but not sorry. But now I can't stop thinking about why will and not doesn't become willn't. Instead, it becomes won't. And this is all Mind the Hope's fault on TikTok. Listen.
Who decided that the words will and not become won't? Shouldn't it be willn't? The words could not become couldn't. The words would and not becomes wouldn't. The words did and not becomes didn't. Do and not becomes don't. So why would the words will and not become won't? It should be willn't.
Sorry about that audio. There was some music removed, and so it changed the way it came out. So,
well, I willn't be listening to that again.
Yeah, no, we won't because it didn't make any sense. So, yeah, so should and not become shouldn't, could and not becomes couldn't, mm-hmm. would and not becomes wouldn't, do and not becomes don't. Why is will and not won't and not willn't?
Because it used to be won't. W-O-N-N-O-T was the negative form of that phrase back in the olden days in England.
Of course you know this.
I thought you googled it.
I thought you were making this up for a second. I was like, oh, this sounds really legit.
No, it is legit. That's why. I mean, it should be updated to be willn't, and maybe we should start using it.
I kind of like willn't.
The willn't.
Uh-huh.
Willn't. I don't think I can be used to
it. I willn't finish the rest of the show because I am tired and my brain is mush and we need to get ready for Burt's Big Adventure. All right, so Mo, you think you have something from an ex that is meaningful, but your current partner is like, no, you need to get rid of that. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I know a couple that's going through this debate and I feel like it's a debate that you hear often amongst couples. Like, what are the rules when it comes to things that you can keep that you may have gotten from an ex and things that you cannot keep that you may have gotten from an ex? And this particular argument started, and they have been going back and forth about this forever, because she thinks that he is holding on to his ex by holding on to anything that he ever received from his ex, regardless of what it is. But in his mind, there should be certain things that you can keep because it's not about the fact that you got it from your ex, but you just appreciate the gift. So in this particular case, his ex made like a, what do you call those? Like a collage form at some point.
A vision board.
Something like that. And it's like his entire life put together in one book. Like all of the things that he's accomplished throughout his life. Some family members that are no longer with him are in the book. It's just the book is very meaningful. It took a lot of time and he really loves it. Now, maybe he should have withheld the information of where he got it from in order to keep it, but he wanted to be honest. So he told her where he got it from. He got it from his ex. And immediately her response was, it has to go because they are now moving in together. And she's like, that's not coming with us. And he feels like, why not? Like it has so many memories in it. It was so well put together. It was the one thing that he feels like she got right when they were together and he doesn't want to toss it. And I guess she had asked him to toss it before. And he was like, all right, but then he put it somewhere else. So when she found it the second time, she was like, all right, we're not doing this. Like, if you do want to keep this, then we need to talk about it. But why do you need to keep this? She is no longer in your life. She's no longer a part of your life. And if you don't desire her anymore, it needs to go. And he thinks she's crazy because he feels like you can easily want to keep a gift and not necessarily still desire the person who gave it to you. So if y'all are in this position, how do you move?
It's got to go.
Damn, that was quick.
It did.
You didn't want to take a second.
No, okay. I didn't need to take a breath. I didn't need to take a beat. I didn't need to take a second. Like, is it, am I being somewhat juvenile? Sure, I'll own it. But if I look at that and now all I see is the ex, it's tainted. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's tainted. And if there is no necessary reason to keep it, then why keep it?
So there's never been anything that you were given as a gift at some point in life that you took into a new relationship and felt like, I don't want to get rid of this. I don't want the guy. I don't want to get rid of this.
As far as like a gift, no. Mm-mm.
I don't. Now, I stole something. But I stole something from an ex. So technically, it wasn't a gift. I jacked it for retribution for the crappy way he treated me in the relationship. So that I have kept as more of a, like a...
loophole.
Got, stuck to you kind of thing. But as far as like a significant other in my past giving me a gift, do I have anything like that? No, uh-uh.
For me, it's all in the explanation. And I was on the side of he should be able to keep it until you started giving me the reasons why he wanted to keep it. And you said the phrase, he feels like this is the one thing that they got right as a couple. And I thought, oh, okay. So you look at that and you think of her. Whereas when you first told me what it was, I was like, but this is a book about his accomplishments and his family. Like, it's more about his life than about their relationship. And the moment you said it's the one thing they got it right, I was like, oh no, he looks at that and he thinks about her. So it's got to go.
Well, I think as a guy, I get the joke he was making in that. It's like, that's how least I want her or I even care about her. It's just like, that's the only thing she did that actually was meaningful in the end. And it's meaningful because of the memories that he has and some of those pictures that are in it that he doesn't want to get rid of. So that's how I saw it. Now, I don't know if I would die on that hill if I was him, but I do understand why you would want to keep something like that for the memories.
Well, yeah. I have a hard time deleting a photo of my kid on my phone, let alone, like, you know, actually throwing away photos of friends and family and stuff. And I get that. I think he's just stupid because he didn't say, no, I was really into scrapbooking back in the day and I put this together myself.
Look at him being stupid for being honest.
As a lady, I'd be like, you were doing what in your free time?
He used to go to Archiver and have just a field day picking out stickers and paper and, you know, putting a scrapbook together.
That's a bigger offense for Abby.
I'm really tempted to make a politically incorrect joke right now.
The Burt Show.